Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. Wow. I gotta tell you. The whole last couple of hours, even though I've listened to the special a few times after producing it, I still enjoyed listening to it. I hope you enjoyed it too. I really, really hope you enjoyed it. I gotta say, there's some things that I actually forgot about putting in there. And what I've done, originally when I produced this, I put it on my phone and I was listening to it while I was walking the dog or exercising or whatever. And then I would take a couple mental notes and I'd change things here or there. And I still feel like, oh, I could have changed a few things here or there. And then I had to stop myself and realize that it's not about that right now. It's there. And I'm getting all kinds of great messages online that they enjoyed the Robert Hyland special. And I got to say, it was just fun. And I hope you enjoyed it too. If you want to text in about it, you can at 314-436-7900. We're waiting for a very special guest. Bob Costas was going to call in. We're going to share some KMOX memories with him. And I wrote down a couple of things. Oh, how about that? Just like that. Joining us now, KMOX legend, Mr. Bob Costas. Thank you for coming on with us tonight.
Hello, Ryan. How are you? And some things never change. I know this number like I know my phone number from when I was a kid. 314-436-7975. Or, from Illinois, as I remember, Enterprise 9-808.
It's amazing. And for the last couple of hours...
At your service. May we have your question or comment, please?
There's some things that broadcasters could remember, the phone number. But if someone were to ask you what the weather is, and you could have said it about 10 times... within the last hour, you still got to look it up. For some reason, my mind's like that. But you have one of those minds. It seems like you remember just about everything.
Well, I'm not bad. I'm probably not as good as I used to be. You know, you lose a few brain cells with each passing year. The synapses don't fire quite as well as they used to, but I'm still getting by, I guess.
Good. How have you been holding up with the lockdown, the quarantines, and no sports?
You know, the no sports part of it, and I don't mean to minimize it, that's the least of it for me. I've been around a long time. Would I prefer that they were playing baseball now? Of course. But I prefer that they had a resolution to the NHL season and the NBA season? Of course. But that'll come around when it comes around, and it should only come back, as much as we may miss it, should only come back when it makes practical sense and when it makes health and safety sense. And I'm not 100% sure when that might be. Luckily for me and for my family, we're all safe, we're all healthy, we're well situated. Someone said to me, a friend of mine, early on when all of this sequestering began, we're fortunate. We just have to adjust. Other people, some of them, have to try to figure out how to survive. Mm-hmm. So I feel for people in those situations, and I realize how fortunate I am, and I'm just waiting it out now until some degree of normalcy returns and we go back to at least a portion of what we used to do.
You know, that statement that you just made, I've heard Tim Conway Jr. quote you several times listening to his show. He said exactly that. Oh, yeah, he must have heard you say that somewhere, but he's mentioned it on his show a few times in the last couple of weeks and months. I'm a big fan of Tim Conway Jr. I think he's a fantastic broadcaster. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you about Mr. Hyland. We just aired the radio documentary, and I know that some people may know this because I've mentioned it on the show, but I messaged you, and I was in shock that he was not in the National Radio Hall of Fame. He belongs to be in there. And you were so generous and gracious, and you wrote a letter of recommendation. We included it, and we were able to submit it to the Radio Hall of Fame. We're still waiting to see if they're going to accept him into the hall. Mr. Hyland, I think, is one of those unique broadcast minds. He was someone that could look so far into the future. You don't find radio managers that could lead a radio station to that sort of prominence and a track record of not only ratings but revenue over 20, 30 years. But then you can see the blueprint he set forth to lead the radio station even after he passed away. He was really a unique person.
He was every bit of that. And it's stunning to me when you reached out to me, stunning that he wasn't long since in the Radio and Broadcasting Hall of Fame. He is, for anyone who's knowledgeable about the subject, one of the most consequential people in the history of American radio. The quality of what he put on the air, both the programming and the quality of the talent he attracted, at any given time, there was almost as much first-rate talent at KMOX as you would need to staff an entire network broadcast operation, especially in sports. And by saying that, I don't mean to diminish the greatness of a Jack Carney or a Jim White or a Bob Hardy and so many others. But in terms of sports, very often CBS would actually call Mr. Hyland and say, who do you have who can help us out this weekend? Jack Buck did network games. Gary Bender did network games. Dan Kelly did network games in hockey. But I got my first network shot when they called Mr. Hyland in 1976, and they needed somebody to do a small regional game on a football Sunday. And he actually said, I got a 24-year-old kid here. He's pretty good. He looks like he's 14. He's 24. And they said, send him to New York. And I came to New York. They signed me to a one-game contract for $500 a game, which was a bit less than the going rate, but I would have paid them $500 if I had $500 at the time. And something that was wonderful about Mr. Hyland, he took, among many things, he took tremendous pride in his operation and in the primacy of KMOX. You had to explain to people who'd never been to St. Louis, it wasn't just that it was a big station or a successful station. It was truly the voice of St. Louis. If you heard it on KMOX, it was the equivalent then of having read it in the New York Times. Radio broadcasters on KMOX, again, no disrespect intended to the television stars in town, but the radio voices on KMOX were bigger stars than the television anchors on the news. It was just a close to unique situation. But even so, even with all that, he recognized that if you bring people with talent to your station, they may have other opportunities. And he always said to us, he said, follow Jack Buck's model. Keep your base here in St. Louis, no matter what else you do. It's something not just to fall back on, but it's something that can't be duplicated on a national level. The relationship you have with a local audience, you'll always have a place here. You'll always be part of this family. And if things go wrong, you come right back here. But if things go as well as I hope they do for you, you're still part of our family. Drop in anytime. That's what he impressed upon me. And to this day, when people ask me, what's your hometown? I always say St. Louis. I miss it very much. There were a couple of Cardinal games on the early schedule for the Major League Baseball Network. And as always, when there is a Cardinal game, I was planning to come into town several days early and stay several days after that, just so I could catch up with friends and family that I still have in St. Louis. Those roots go very deep. And were it not for KMOX, if I had just dropped in to do the Spirits of St. Louis games and KMOX wasn't the powerhouse that it was, and if Mr. Hyland wasn't the presence that he was, after 2 years when the Spirits folded, I might have left town and sought another job. St. Louis became home for me, and Mr. Highland was a big reason why.
You know, I think broadcasters remember those first, your first day at a radio station, learning things the first time you get to a radio market, or maybe your first game with the Spirits, or maybe your first network game. And something I heard during the special was the moment in you just described there is when you walked into Mr. Highland's office and you had this opportunity from NBC and you wanted to go talk to him about it. Were you nervous? Was it on par with some of those other first moments?
I was very, very nervous, but not as nervous as what happened in 1975. The Spirits had a good conclusion to their first year. They beat Dr. J and the Nets in the ABA playoffs, and they actually drew some halfway decent crowds in the playoffs. And KMOX had been shunting the Spirits to FM if there was a conflict with the Blues, which only made sense. The Blues were an established and popular team, and there were some games that didn't air at all. And the management of the Spirits felt that that was not proper treatment. And they took the games to WIL. And they wanted me to broadcast the games on WIL. I had a tremendous relationship with the people who ran the Spirits. They were friends of mine. I spent a lot of time with them. They wanted me there. Mr. Highland wanted me to stay at KMOX. And Mr. Highland said, look, you want to go do these games? Go do these games. We'll say that we've loaned you to WIL. And then you come back here, because long range, this is going to be a better place for you. And even Dak Buck said at the time, wow, he must really think you're pretty good. He wouldn't do that for anybody else. And that was just one of the many things that endeared me to Mr. Highland. He got me out of a very tough spot. I was just a kid, and I had no family in St. Louis, and I felt attachment both to Mr. Highland and to Harry Weltman, who ran the Spirits. I didn't know what to do, and Mr. Highland got me through it.
Isn't that amazing? I have so many other questions for you around that time. Do you mind holding on?
Sure. Of course not. And, no problem.
I want to play for you a clip I found, too, where Mr. Highland was talking about you right after you were hired. I think you'll enjoy hearing that. But okay. There are so many different memories that we've shared over the last couple of hours of Mr. Highland. We're going to continue our conversation now with Mr. Bob Costas, KMOX legend on KMOX.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
And welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. And joining us again for this segment is Bob Costas. And I got to say, Bob, it's always a pleasure when you take some time and get to talk some old KMOX memories.
Thanks, Ryan. I've got more of them than you have time for. It just holds such a very important place, not just in my career, but in my heart.
Oh, sure. And at the very end of that radio documentary, there was a speech that he gave when he was accepting the Media Personality of the Year. The Mac Club was able to do that. And it's so fascinating to hear that speech from 1990, previewing what the 90s would look like. You would think he was speaking to today. So I was wondering what you think was... How was he able to do that? I mean, he was so remarkable, and it's so difficult for anyone to predict anything that's going to happen a week from now, let alone 3 decades later. He was just such a remarkable mind when it came to radio, and I think he just had probably the best vision of any radio manager I've ever seen.
Well, he certainly understood his market. St. Louis is different from other cities. He might not have done it exactly the same way, or if he'd wanted to, he might not have been quite as successful with the same approach in Chicago or New York or Los Angeles. But he knew it was his hometown, his true hometown, born and raised. He knew St. Louis. He cared deeply about it. He was a very important and influential figure in civic affairs. And so that feel for the city, and also the primacy of radio at that time, there would have to be adjustments. If a young Bob Hyland were working today, there's so much media out there, so much content, that it's difficult even for work of the highest quality to have quite the same impact as it once did. But I think the speech you're talking about was less a peering into a crystal ball, although it certainly was prescient. It was really more just a statement of his principles. And they happen to be principles which I absolutely share, even though we were not of the same generation. Things can change. It doesn't make any difference whether you're reading something on a tablet or a smartphone, or it was written on a piece of parchment paper with a quill pen. It doesn't make any difference whether you're receiving it through a streaming service, or you're asking Siri, as I just heard on the last spot, to play KMOX, or if you're watching or listening to it on an old cathedral radio. What matters is quality and credibility. What matters is it true? Is it fair? And is it something of quality? That's what he was talking about primarily. The world can change, technology can change, but there are certain bedrock truths that should never have changed, though sadly they have.
I wonder, too, when you first joined the staff of KMOX, who were those personalities that first were friendly to you, helped show you the ropes, and really, in some ways, became friends at KMOX?
Well, Bill Wilkerson and I were very close. Bill was among the sports staff the closest to me in age, and they assigned him to work with me only on the home games. I did the road games by myself, but on the home games, he worked with me on the Spirits, and Bill and I were close throughout his life. Apart from that, early on, Jack Carney really, really helped me. I just happened to be walking through the studios one day. He beckoned me to come in and sit with him. He already was an absolute legend, one of the great masters of radio that I've ever heard, able to tap into what the essence of radio is, that theater of the mind, the power of the imagination. He built an entire world of characters and backstories and relationships that his audience was familiar with, that he could tap into. There was such a texture to that world that he created, and he was so good as an interviewer, a storyteller, all those things. So he's already established as the king of morning radio in St. Louis. So he beckons me in, and he starts asking me some questions designed to just familiarize him and the audience with this kid who's arrived out of Syracuse University and is doing these games. And I guess I said a few things that he found amusing. And then he started peppering me with sports questions, and especially at that time, I was good on sports trivia, and I knew the answers most of the time. And then he dubs me young Bobby Costas, and obviously more people are listening to Jack Carney than were listening to the basketball games. So that introduced me on a broader scale to the St. Louis audience, and I think that made a big, big difference. It helped to loosen me up and make me feel more comfortable, because you take someone like Joe Buck. Joe is a remarkably talented guy, and his success attests to that. But he grew up around it. When I first met Joe, he was 6 or 7 years old, and he was hanging around with his dad. So by osmosis, he felt a certain level of comfort in the broadcast world, and he picked up on how to carry himself and how to act. Whereas all I had in my head was the notions I had from listening to great broadcasters on television and on radio, or from what I picked up from watching movies or reading newspapers and magazines. I had no first-hand experience. I didn't even have a credit card when I arrived in Syracuse. And after taxes, my paychecks in that first year were $157 and change. And I would have to go over to Boatman's Bank, which then was across the street from KMOX on Memorial Drive, to cash the check before I could go on the road with the Spirits, because I didn't have a credit card, I didn't know what an expense account was. I was so wet behind the ears. I had to figure out how to carry myself. And I'm sure I made some missteps, not out of any presumptuousness or arrogance, but just because I didn't know what to do. I don't know if Jack Buck and Dan Kelly and Bob Starr understood then how much, not just respect, but reverence I had for them. And Jack Carney and Bob Hardy, people like that who were really kind to me, and Mr. Hyland, because I knew that in his own way, he had my back. They got me through those first couple of years until I got my sea legs under me and became a better version of myself, at least of my public self.
You know, I heard that Jack Carney would always play a prank on the new guy. So did he ever play a prank on you?
I'm trying to think about a prank. There must have been one, but nothing springs immediately to mind. He put me in a lot of these radio plays that he did. He wrote these little radio operas. He would write them usually on the weekends, and then we'd present them on a Monday. And if any big stars were coming through town to play the Fox or the Muni Opera, he had such connections in show business, he'd bring them in. So Jimmy Dean or Shirley Jones or someone like that would be sitting there playing some role in these radio plays. And he was Tiki Jack, sort of an international man of mystery, friend to kings and brigands alike. And I was his young sidekick, Rob Roy, kind of Robin to his Batman. And these were very cleverly written radio plays with sound effects and all kinds of touches. And, you know, they caught on. And he wrote some things that made me look silly, but that doesn't really qualify as a prank.
You know, I always wondered about the one thing, because I've heard a lot of those, and there's a couple of times where you guys would crack up, and Miss Miriam would say something, and he would say, hold on, what did you say? Yeah, or Miss Blue, excuse me. And he would say, can you read that over again? I was curious if that was rehearsed or if that was just how it flowed.
No, and he didn't want Miss Blue to rehearse it. It was so much funnier, because she would read it just as Miss Miriam Blue. It's a testament to how great he was. There's sort of an element, and I've never thought of this until this second, that he shared with David Letterman. David Letterman, in his heyday at NBC and later at CBS, think about this. He would make stars out of the people who ran the deli around the corner, or the otherwise awkward cameraman, or somebody who worked on the back deck. He'd just take them and put them in sketches or have conversations with them, and their awkwardness, which he didn't exploit in a mean-spirited way, their awkwardness and their lack of television polish actually made them funnier, and they became minor stars in the firmament or in the world of David Letterman. On a smaller scale in St. Louis, Jack Carney did exactly that. He did it with Miss Blue. He did it with his engineer, Clarence Nieder. He did it with other people that were just kind of denizens of the KMOX world. And that was a really important thing about KMOX. Loyal listeners really felt as if it was a KMOX family. So Bob Hardy could be on the air with Rex Davis, but if Ann Keith just dropped in, oh yeah, we know Ann. There's Ann Keith. Jim White could be on the air late at night, but if I had been at the ballpark and then went out with some friends and was anywhere near downtown, if I wanted to walk in at 1:30 in the morning, yeah, it was perfectly normal for that to happen. And the audience knew not just what these people did as broadcasters, they had some sense of them as people, some sense of their biographies and backgrounds. And it just created something that was just more than the usual one or two dimensional thing that you get. There was a real kind of texture to it. And Jack Carney was a master of doing that.
Yeah, and I also heard a story, and I'm pretty sure this is true, but Jack Carney was also someone that really stood up for other people. When you talk about Miss Blue, from what I understand, he really stood up to get her inside the union to make sure she got a better pay rate because of other things she was doing at the time. She was on air a lot, but she wasn't really, that wasn't her job. But he always would stand up and make sure to try to do the right thing for people.
Yeah, that was him. Jack Buck was that way, too. Jack Buck had such an influence on the city and on broadcasters in the city. Look, he was one of the giants. He's a Mount Rushmore sports broadcaster. Completely distinctive, not just in his delivery and his wonderful calls of big moments for the Cardinals or on national TV or radio, but also his dry wit, his work as a banquet MC. But what just about everybody in St. Louis came to know, and certainly those of us in broadcasting knew, was that nobody ever did a better job of paying it forward than Jack Buck. I mean, not hundreds, but thousands of charity appearances and good causes that he lent his name to, or just acts of kindness that he knew would raise the spirits of people who cared about the Cardinals and therefore cared about him. And if you saw that, you knew that you could never match it. He was one of a kind, but you could try. You could do the best that you could do on your own terms. And just about all of us pitched in. We tried to do our part. It was part of the ethos of what being a broadcaster in St. Louis was. That, yeah, you're going to do community stuff. Yeah, you're going to do charity stuff. And damn straight, you're going to know how lucky you are to be where you are and share that good fortune in whatever ways, large and small, you can with others.
Yeah, I still have people that call into the show and give memories of different encounters when they bumped into someone. And there was one person called in. He was a guard over at the jail downtown here. And he said he would bump into Jack Buck every day during the summer. And every day Jack Buck would come up to him. And then they would go to lunch. You'd buy him a sandwich. And he said every day for the summer, he had a sandwich with Jack Buck. And those are the type of stories I love hearing, because they could have happened 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and they remember it like it was yesterday, because the fondness for the radio station, it's something that left that impression on them. And that station, I don't know if there's any other station in the country that has that type of relationship with the audience.
You know, there are other big stations, and the world has changed. And the influence of radio, while still very significant, is not as huge as it once was. It doesn't have as large a portion of the broadcasting pie and of the audience's attention as it once did. But there were stations like KDKA in Pittsburgh, WLW in Cincinnati, WJR in Detroit. And usually those 50,000-watt stations carried the local baseball team. So they were very influential. But as influential as they were and as powerful as they were, as you're saying, Ryan, you'd have to be in St. Louis to realize that KMOX was something different still. It was a notch above. There was just more to it than simply a 50,000-watt signal and simply having some good broadcasters. The way it was all stitched together, and Mr. Hyland had a lot to do with it, created a different relationship between the station and its broadcasters and its audience than I've ever seen anywhere else.
Man, I really hope he is inducted into the Hall of Fame. It should have been a no-brainer, really, to get him in there.
Crazy.
I don't know why it took so long. Did you induct Jack Carney into the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
something
else.
He had passed away.
Yeah.
I did.
I go back and I look at
Chicago.
Oh, yeah, and I think they still do the ceremonies. I think they moved it to New York for a year, and then I think they're going back to Chicago. And a lot of that had to do with Paul Harvey being the home base, and I think he was a big donor to make sure that kicked all up. I mean, you've ran into all kinds of different broadcasting professionals over the years at the highest level working at NBC. I mean, it's amazing. Sometimes I'll Google something or I'll go to YouTube and I'll see a random interview like you sitting down and interviewing the cast of Frasier and just accidentally follow and catch something that you've done. So you talk about all the talent you've met through the network and you talk about the talent you met here at KMOX, and you say that KMOX was like a network. It was on par with some of the other personalities you worked with on a national scale.
Yeah, well, Bob Hardy was kind of like the Walter Cronkite of St. Louis. Wonderful voice, wonderful delivery, tremendously credible. So you have that. You have Jack Carney, who was as good as anybody. I'm not saying there weren't others that were in his class, but he was as good as anybody who did that sort of thing, that sort of entertainment-type program, but not spinning records. Very occasionally he'd play music, but mostly it was conversation and interviews and his own storytelling and that kind of thing. He was at the top of that class. And then you had overnight people like Jim White or John McCormick, who was a real throwback. I mean, McCormick was like a throwback to the 1930s, the man who walks and talks at midnight. And at first I thought that was just kind of a way that he described himself, until I happened to be in the station at about 2 o'clock in the morning. And here's McCormick, whose musical taste pretty much cut off around 1960, but that was okay because there was an audience for that at that hour of the night. So he'd be spinning tunes, but the entire studio was pitch black, and he had a lamp, one of those crane neck lamps, and he had it so low to the desk, just high enough to be able to slip the copy when he had to read a commercial or a newscast beneath it. So he created an atmosphere that played into his whole persona as the man who walked and talked at midnight. It really was midnight or later. When you walked in there, it was pitch black, except for the little beam coming out of this crane neck lamp. So you had him. And then when it came to sports, Jack Buck, one of the greatest baseball and football announcers ever, someone who did it nationally and did it extremely well. I've often said this. There have been many great football announcers. And, of course, the greatest of them in terms of fame did it on national television. But I have never heard someone call football on the radio as well as Bob Starr. And what was amazing to me, and Bob did Missouri's games and primarily the Cardinals games before they left for Arizona, what was amazing to me was that he did it without a spotter. He would just take the flip card that had the rosters on it that they give you, you know, if you come into the press box from the Belleville News Democrat or something, and that's all he needed. And he did it off the top of his head, flawlessly, with a perfect baritone voice. And just like Doc Emrick now, who does the games on NBC, is the gold standard of hockey announcers for a very long time until his premature death when he was still in his 50s, Dan Kelly was the gold standard of hockey announcers. He shoots, he scores. That was Dan Kelly. Now everybody says it. But that was Dan Kelly. And he would do the Stanley Cup Finals on network television because he was the guy that everybody wanted. So, wow. You know, whether it was baseball, football, hockey, I think I was the weak link doing basketball, but I did the best I could. I mean, we had in every case somebody who was as good as whoever was doing it on the network at the time.
That's really remarkable. I want to play for you a clip from one of the At Your Service anniversary dates where Mr. Hyland mentions you. And I know I'm keeping you long, but our producer, Mike, is dying to ask you a question. So I'm going to have him ask you one more before we take a break. But let me play you this clip real quick.
Yes, I'm a listener from way back. Remember when the printing presses were upstairs over the studio in the Mart building?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, well, that goes way back, you know. Well, anyhow, I want you to know that Mr. Costa has got a real charisma way above his skills, too, that a lot of people that are not interested in sports, they do love him for the way he, well, just being himself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you recognize that fact, that's all I want to know.
We recognize that fact. Bob Costas is a great personality, and we're very pleased to have him on our staff, and you can expect that he'll be here for many years.
Besides that, he's like that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just doesn't turn on that personality when the light goes on with the mic. Bob comes bouncing into the newsroom.
Amazing young man.
Yeah, so I wanted to play that for you. I don't know if you remember that at all.
I don't remember because I'd never heard it until just now, but that makes me smile.
Oh, and of course, Ann Keefe, unbelievable personality on top of that. I want producer Mike to come up and ask you a question real quick. Are you there, Mike?
Yes, I am. And Ryan, first of all, it's very gracious of you to allow me the time. And Mr. Costas, what an honor to be talking to you on the air. So it's ironic that my question, you kind of organically answered half of it in when you were discussing the live radio plays with Tiki Jack and so and so forth. The question that I wanted to ask you about it was, we've all heard this about the seriousness of Robert Hyland. How did someone have to convince him to allow something this comical on the air? Or how did his seriousness coincide with these comedic plays, or how did the two come about?
You know, it's a really good question, because Mr. Hyland looked and carried himself like Central Casting in the 1940s or 50s had sent in a judge or a senator. You know, 6'2", movie star handsome, wavy silvery hair, erect posture, deep voice. And when you walked into his office, no matter how busy he was, and legendarily, when I first got there, he'd show up at 3 o'clock in the morning, Monday through Saturday, and stay till 6, Monday through Friday, until noon on Saturday. But then as the years went by, you would think he would slack off as he got older. But in fact, he started coming in at 2 and then at 1:30 in the morning. And so if that was his work ethic, you certainly didn't think you could say, oh, gee, Mr. Hyland, I need a few days off, or you've asked me to do this, but I already did that. No, I can't do it. No. But because he was such a figure of propriety and dignity and sobriety, he actually, if you had the standing, and I certainly didn't at that point, but if you were Jack Buck or you were Jack Carney, then he was a good foil sometimes, because it was kind of like, I don't mean this, I was going to use a different example, and it's the wrong one to use, so scratch that. But he was just a perfect, in fact, at one point, after I'd been there for a while, Dan Dierdorf and I decided that it would be fun to broadcast wrestling on the radio, because Hulk Hogan at the old arena was taking on Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff, for the title. All right. And we've been talking about this in a tongue-in-cheek way for weeks. And then we went all out. We hired a stretch limousine. We showed up not just in tuxedos, but top hats and tails. And Keith was the color commentator. She showed up in an evening gown. And we sat ringside. And we quizzed our interview subjects with questions such as, like, to the referee, tell me, what's it like to be an official in a sport that has no rules? Or we'd ask the commissioner, by my calculations, Andre the Giant has a career record of 673-0 and yet cannot get a title shot. So we were doing all this stuff, and it was live on the air for like 2-3 hours some evening on KMOX. And we had dubbed, when people asked us how we're going to do this, we dubbed, Dan and I dubbed Mr. Hyland the high priest of heavyweight hijinks. And had he not been this sort of above reproach figure, you couldn't have poked fun at him that way, but you couldn't dare to do it until you already had some job security. I wouldn't have done that in 1975. I did do it in 1985.
Wow. I got to say, I've really enjoyed the past hour, and I don't know how Mr. Hyland would have reacted, because, I mean, I've blown through a couple of breaks. I've enjoyed the conversation so much. He probably would have called, and I would have got yelled at this point, I'm guessing.
Oh, how much time do you have, Ryan?
I got as much time as we need. It's lucky. It's
okay.
A lucky night.
He would do that. He was so funny sometimes when he'd get all worked up, you know. So one time, a broadcaster who shall remain nameless, part-time guy there, was displeasing him on a Saturday afternoon. And I happened to be at the station. So he calls the sports office, and I pick up the phone. He says, Bob, I want you to go in there right now, all right? And I want you to take over the broadcast. But it's the other guy's show. I said, well, I can't, like, throw him out of the studio. He goes, all right. But just make sure he doesn't say anything. It's radio, and it's his show. What's he supposed to do? Pantomime stuff? Then there was a guy. This ties into Mike's question, which is very perceptive, because Mr. Hyland had created this citadel of broadcasting, and he would do these editorials that were very much about civic pride. And he went to church every single morning. He'd go across to the old cathedral every morning for 7 a.m., Mass. And because he was this picture of rectitude, that it was easier sometimes if you could just kind of prick the bubble a little bit. It was all the funnier and the audience kind of was in on the joke. So for whatever reason, this is sometime around 1977, 78, and disco is becoming very popular. Now, Mr. Hyland was not exactly up on the latest musical trends, but he read Billboard magazine and Variety and, you know, the radio and television trades. And he usually did that reading on a Saturday. So he calls me into his office on a Saturday morning, and he says, what do you know about disco, Bob? And I said, well, I don't like it as much as rock and roll. I don't like the Bee Gees as much as I like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, but it's very popular, Mr. Hyland. He says, well, what do you think of this guy, Otis Boogeyman Thomas? And Otis Boogeyman Thomas had a show that used to come on around midnight on Channel 4 or Channel 5. I can't remember what it was, which it was. But it was from the top of a downtown hotel, and it was called Otis Thomas's Boogie Machine. And he had these dancing girls in Danskin outfits, and he presided over this. He was sort of like a St. Louis version of Don Cornelius. So Mr. Hyland decides, to my absolute shock, he's going to hire Otis Boogeyman Thomas. Fast forward a couple of weeks. It's another Saturday morning. And again, he calls me at home and says, come on down to the station. So naturally, it's a command performance. I come on down to the station. And he's got some letters spread out on his desk. And his desk was always pristine. It was always polished to a high sheen. You could practically see a reflection in it. He didn't like any clutter. But he did have the papers there, the letters. And he holds up a letter. And he says, let me ask you something, Bob. Is there a song called I Want to Kiss You All Over? Well, Mr. Hyland, I believe there is. And then he says, is there another one? And even now, even in 2020, I'm not going to say the title of this particular song. Mr. Hyland, there is. And he took his hand, the palm of his hand, and he rubbed it from his chin all the way up to his forehead and through his hair, like kind of like mashing his face into a grimace. And then he threw the letter down. He slammed his fist on the table and he said, Bob, the boogeyman has gone too far. And the next day, the boogeyman was on the street.
Oh, man, I could talk Camo X stories all night, honestly, but I know I'm going to get in trouble. And you know what? It was worth it. Every single moment was worth it because, Bob, anytime we get an opportunity to get you on, I got to say, it's an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you on.
Ryan, I am so happy, and I know I may have abused the privilege, but I'm so happy to once again address a St. Louis audience and a KMOX audience. And Mr. Hyland still has family there, and they're very proud of the fact that one of his grandchildren is a big-time producer at NBC, does Notre Dame football, does all the Triple Crown horse races, the Kentucky Derby, and whatnot. And he was just a young child when Mr. Hyland passed away. And he has frequently asked me to tell him stories about his grandfather. And he's delighted in them, especially the one about the boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, we're getting a lot of great responses to this documentary. And I feel like this interview, this time together, is going to be a piece that accompanies it for a long time. Bob Costas, thank you so much for coming on tonight and joining us to talk some KMOX memories.
Thank you, Ryan. Be well.
And if you missed the documentary from earlier, we're going to replay it here after midnight, so you really didn't miss out on it. So I really hope that you had fun tonight. I loved it. And we will post it online eventually. Thank you for joining us on this KMOX adventure tonight. Make sure to go like Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.